Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
And on left wing, we have the superstar himself. The reason why we're here, future of German hockey, JJ Paterka!
He's got a man wide open to the far circle. Shot scores, JJ Paterka.
That is.
JJ Paterka available and presumably ready to roll for the Sabres tonight in Pittsburgh. Eventful preseason for JJ, and I think this is going to be a pretty interesting show. I have some big news to share at the end of it with you, Marty. So, and I know you have goalie goals on your mind, so you probably have a lot to, you know, get excited about. But at the root of it all, it is a game day for the Sabres.
Yeah, and I think that's where we got to start, right? The Sabres have had a few days of practice. Look, they had the day off Sunday, but practice on Monday, Tuesday before heading out to Pittsburgh. And it was two intense days of practice. And I am really looking forward to this response. They got their first win, so the nerves are out of the way. You play the same way you did against LA and Florida in Pittsburgh. And maybe even ramp it up a notch, right? And that's the thing. But we do have availability for tonight's contest from JJ Paterka. We anticipate he's playing. The same thing with Zach Benson. Lindy Ruff said on the morning show on GR today that, look, Benson's dealing with a little something, but nothing that is going to prevent him from playing. So, yeah, the other day against Florida, he limited his minutes because he only had 11 forwards and he had committed to going with three lines. And when you go with three lines, if you're going to pick a couple of guys to sit, you're not going to throw him in after 10 minutes of sitting, and Benson wasn't going to go back in there. But I would think that with four lines and more of a regular lineup, Benson's going to be in the top six again, just to figure out, is he with Thompson and Tuck or is he with Cousins and Quinn? Like, that's where I'm not sure what the top two lines are going
to
be like.
Do you expect Jiří to come out?
I expect Jiří to not be in the top six. Now
way to straddle the fence.
Yeah, I know. Because before the show, I'm always conversing with producer Jeff, and I'm looking at the lineup and I'm like, oh, does that mean Jiří comes out, or is Jiří playing with Krebs and Malenstein on what is the fourth line? You're not going to touch the McLeod line with Greenway and Zucker. So
I'm at. It's not an untouchable line.
You're not doing it right now, especially after the way they played last game.
Right, but the reason we're having this discussion is you probably don't want to take Jiří out of the lineup after his best game.
I wouldn't take him out. So I think the odd man out would be Sam Lafferty for the game tonight. But again, it is a back-to-back situation. I don't like that coaches nowadays look at the back-to-back and say, okay, well, maybe tonight Jiří plays and maybe tomorrow I insert Lafferty in because I need energy and I need, you know, that never was the case. I know coaches do that more now, but maybe there's a little flexibility in the lineup knowing that you're playing tonight in Pittsburgh and tomorrow in Columbus.
Yeah. Dueling three-game point streaks. Whose gets extended tonight, Tuck or Malkin? Tuck has 4 points in the last three. Malkin, 7 in the last three.
And look, it's kind of weird because I've not really liked Evgeny Malkin's game so far with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He had an empty net last game against Montreal. I felt like the guys that led the way for Pittsburgh last game were the Lars Eller. It was the, you know, Raquel and Bunting were good, better than Malkin, in my opinion. Hayes and Achari, those were the guys. Beauvillier, those are the guys that I felt led the way for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, if that's the case tonight, again, then I think Tuck has more of a chance to extend his point streak than Malkin. But that maybe is another decision, internal decision, how Lindy Ruff sees the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup and how he wants his lineup to be going. Because I don't know, maybe you say, hey, Benson isn't 100%. So I'm going to keep Kulik with, let's see, Cousins and Quinn because he's been more comfortable. I'm going to put Peterka with Thompson and Tuck, and I'm going to put Benson with Krebs and Malenstein because I want to be able to take advantage of a Portland matchup and really play that game on the road against, you know, Mike Sullivan, who is always looking to take advantage of matchups with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I think there's options there for the lineup for the Sabres in this game.
Little did I know until this very moment that you were one of the voters on the NHL's top 100 of all time that excluded Evgeny Malkin.
I put him 101. That's there you go, Malkin. And I'm still not over the slap shot and the breakaway in the playoffs that he scored on me, so that's why.
Well, you're probably not over all the goals that Sidney Crosby scored against you as well. However, Marty, you are part of a wonderful footnote. Wonderful, maybe not the right word.
Yeah.
An interesting footnote. The Sabres are trying to win three in a row against the Penguins for the first time since they did from the year 2005 into 2006. And that was a five-game win streak capped by you and a star performance on home ice in a high-shot affair in which the Sabres prevailed 4-2. Nicely done. Yeah. Crosby beat you twice,
but other than that,
you were
clean. Showing on MSG. I mean, I went full-out poke check, two-pad stack poke check on MSG, and this was in the 2006-2007 season. Yep. Obviously, I had the white mask on. We were back to the blue and gold in the slug, but in this game that we're showing the image, we had the Sabres original logo on, which I always love when we switched it up a little bit with a third jersey, a little bit like the Sabres are doing with the goat head now. It brought a different energy, even though we're in the same colors. But yeah, even Ryan Miller, smiling and long-haired Ryan Miller came over
looked
to congratulate
me. So happy for you. That was nice.
That is the end of my success against the Pittsburgh Penguins. It didn't start well in my career. First NHL game was not good. And then after that, I went to Pittsburgh, went to Philly, lost in the playoffs both years to Pittsburgh. And with the New York Islanders, got destroyed by Pittsburgh. And with the Rangers, I never played the Pittsburgh Penguins because it was Lundqvist all the way. Mm-hmm. They were such a big rival.
True or false, we're expecting Luukkonen versus Jari tonight.
True. It has been both confirmed by both sides that they would be in the net tonight. One has scored a goalie goal, and one would probably hope to score a goalie goal in his career. Tristan Jarry scored a goalie goal last year. Luukkonen, and I think, like any goalie, would want to score. And now that we saw Filip Gustavsson score one last night, I'm sure it's even more at the front of goalie's mind. Like, oh, I hope I get my opportunity.
I can assure you that if Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was gifted the same opportunity that Gustavsson was last night on an ill-fated, it's not even a dump-in. It's at a direct shot to the netminder, like, here, do something with it. And Pavel Buchnevich just gave a glorious opportunity to Gustavsson, who was working with a two-goal lead.
Yeah,
obviously,
that's the thing.
He's going to fire it down the ice. Amazing.
So let's set the scene, right? With about 14, 15 seconds, there's a face-off outside the zone. They win the draw. The set play was probably go D to D, try to get it on net because you're down two with 15 seconds left. You're not going to have time to get in, set up a play, and then have another chance at it. So I understand why Buchnevich is going to say, I'm going to shoot it on net. But the one place you're not going to score on a goalie from shooting from center ice is on the glove side. Like, all Filip Gustavsson did was, thank you very much, I'm going to put it down. Like try to skip it. Try to put it to the blocker. Like, do something with it. He shot it right at the glove. Man. He puts it down and shoots it all the way down the ice, which led me to do a little bit of goalie goal research today, Duffer.
Wow.
How many goalies have scored a goalie goal now with Filip Gustavsson adding his name to the list?
Well, sadly, Darcy Wakalak didn't make it onto the NHL list after scoring with Rochester. And incredibly, there are some who have done it in both leagues, the NHL and the American Hockey League. producer Jeff and I took guesses at this before the show. I mean, not to use excuses, but I'm suffering from an overall body injury at the moment, so I'm not sure my
general malaise.
If I had a commanding unit in the Army, that would be my title, is General Malaise.
Where's General Malaise at? Let's get him over here. Malaise, over here, please.
So anyway, Jeff was much closer to the actual number, which you're going to divulge now.
Yeah, so 15 goalies have scored a goal in the National Hockey League. Billy Smith was the first one, although he did not shoot it in. Ron Ekstall.
Colorado Rockies were the opponent, correct?
Yes, Colorado Rockies, Billy Smith. And then Ron Ekstall was the first one to shoot a goal in. But out of the 15, there's been 18 goalie goals. Ron Ekstall has two. Marty Brodeur has three. Here's the interesting thing.
Playoffs, Ron Ekstall's included.
Playoffs included, 18 goals. Only Ekstall has a playoff goal. Brodeur also has a playoff goal. There's only been two.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about it is Ron Ekstall is the only goalie to have shot it in the net twice. Marty Brodeur has three goals. Only the first one, which was in the playoffs, by the way, was a shot in. The other two were own goals. So how lucky is Marty to have had two own goals in his career, not once, but twice. So Ron Ekstall, Chris Osgood, Marty Brodeur, Jose Theodore, Evgeny Nabokov, Mike Smith, Pekka Rinne, Linus Ullmark, Tristan Jarry, and Philip Gustafsson are the names that have shot it in. We all remember Mika Noronen getting credited with a goal. Chris Mason, Cam Ward, and Damian Rhodes of the Ottawa Senators were credited with a goal in an empty net. So there's your 15 guys.
I was in attendance for the Noronen goal, which was scored, of course, by Robert Reichel of the
Toronto Maple Leafs.
And I was, I know, you had a better seat than I did. And I was in attendance for the Ottawa, New Jersey, where Rhodes got credit after Lyle Odelein placed it in his own goal. So,
well, funny enough, is that one, the Damian Rhodes was the first time a goalie had had a shutout while scoring a goal, but Jose Theodore, the very next goalie to score, was the first to have a shutout and to shoot it into the net. Damian Rhodes was, like you said, like a Lyle Odelein trying to get it back to the point. It went all the way down. And Damian Rhodes, Chris Mason, and Tristan Jarry are the only three to have scored in both the AHL and the NHL. And Tristan Jarry did it like by shooting it into the net in both leagues. Like, that was pretty incredible.
So when you look at that list that you just offered up to the audience, who is the most surprising to not be on that list based on how great a puck handler they were in their careers?
I think Marty Turco is the number one name. Like, Marty Turco was so good at playing the puck.
Yeah.
People think that the trapezoid came because of Marty Brodeur. And yes, there was a, Marty was one of the first one to really play the puck well. Ron Ekstall stopped the puck and shot it off the glass and out every time. There wasn't a playing of the puck. Marty Turco was so good at stopping the puck. How goalies now have their glove hand flipped over when playing the puck, that's called the Turco, because he was the very first one to switch the handle on his stick to be able to move the puck quickly. I thought he was really good. Tom Barrasso was also a very good like puck handler, although he would do the other way. He would be like Jose Theodore scored it like that. He would catch with the right hand, but was really a left-handed shooter. So he would flip it the other side and go with the full backhand with the curve being the right way. And he would like lift off that thing in the air.
All-time leader in goalie assists, Tom Barrasso with 48 in his career. So yes, it would stand to reason. Now, when you look at that list though, of top scoring, point getting netminders, the one that is probably still the most agitated to not have scored would be
Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury. Let's be real. Two. Poor Flower. He's on the bench yesterday. Kind of like me. He sees Gustafsson score. Yeah. Fleury has been wanting to score a goal for his whole existence. Like Patrick Roy. Mm-hmm. Patrick couldn't shoot the puck all that well, though.
Right.
Like, it wasn't an art in those days. There was a couple of guys that could do it. Not everybody could do it. It was an art. Maybe that's the other way around.
Yeah.
Funny enough, because we're going into this conversation, who is the first goalie to ever be credited with an assist in the NHL? And that happened in 1917-18 season.
I have no idea.
Vezina. George Vezina. Yeah. Good pick. Good call. Yeah. That's why I bring it up, because the Vezina trophy, but he's the very first one to be credited with an assist, although it was a rebound off his leg that went to a teammate and he scored an empty net. It wasn't until the 35-36 season, 18 years later, that this goalie became the first goaltender to make an intentional pass, and that was Tiny Thompson.
With Boston, yes.
Yeah. So Tiny Thompson, it was during the Second World War.
Yeah.
It Second World War. That's a different thing. But because it didn't start until 39. So anyway, Tiny Thompson, the first goalie to have an actual assist by making a pass.
All right. So off of the goalie matchup, and that was a long stretch of goalie talk after mentioning that Luukkonen and Jari are going head to Luukkonen, by the way, 2-2 lifetime against Pittsburgh. Yes. Jari is 9-3 against the Sabres. Of course, the game is on WGR Sports Radio 550 tonight and not on MSG. So you'll have to wait till tomorrow to see Marty on the pregame.
No pregame, no postgame, no blah.
Well, you'll probably dominate social media at some point during the existence of this game tonight, right?
I'm going to try to dominate.
You've been more aggressive in that manner.
Follow me on Instagram, please.
I don't know if you had a singular person in mind for your focus, your emphasis tonight. I do. It's Rasmus Dahlin.
Okay.
What do you expect from Rasmus, based on everything that has or hasn't happened for him so far since day one of camp?
Well, I mean, since day one of camp, he went on the ice and then he came off the ice. He was a little injured. He played the Red Bull game. I think it's been a slow climb for Dahlin to get to his game. Look, maybe the best the thing that happened in practice, and we talked about him and Krebs, the hit, the fight, and all of that, is the fact that, okay, if you're not feeling 100%, you're not putting yourself in that position in practice, right? You're kind of just, hey, I'm just going to take it easy. I think what we're seeing now is Dahlin has fully recovered from whatever ailed him in preseason in training camp. And I think that physical side of things is going to start stepping up. And if you're going to step up, you're going to do it against, Sidney Crosby and Brian Rust and Evgeny Malkin and Michael Bunting. I would assume that Bunting Toronto Buffalo rivalry that we saw, remember the outdoor game in Hamilton. I would think there's going to be some fireworks between Dahlin and a couple of Pittsburgh tonight. That's the way I see it.
Do you agree that that's maybe not that it needs an agreement, but do you think that's the right place to put a focus and emphasis on right now, in the sense of how one player could dramatically change Buffalo's fortunes moving forward here?
Yeah, because I think, and especially the focus on the physical side with Dahlin, because I think the points are always going to be there, and the skating and the skill set.
But they haven't been yet, and I think that's obviously why. Because the power play is still looking for its first goal, et cetera, right?
Yeah, and he's a big part of that.
Sure.
Another thing that Lindy Ruff has mentioned about the power play on with Jeremy and Joe this morning is he doesn't want it to be from the tops of the circle out. He wants it to be from the hash marks in. He wants everybody to be closer to the net. Mm-hmm. That leaves Dahlin kind of on his own, at the blue line a little bit, but he can sneak in a little. And as soon as the team start to say, oh, crap, they're attacking our net, it's going to leave them wide open. They're going to converge. They're going to be four guys around the crease, and that may leave them wide open for a Matthias Samuelsson type goal where you get the puck and everybody's scrambling and nobody's got you covered. But I think that what when we see Dalin involved physically, and I don't need him to be Chris Pronger out there. I don't need him to be those type of players. But think of a Rob Blake. Rob Blake wasn't like a Pronger type, I'm going to hurt you every time. But Rob Blake did have a physicality to his game that was, you couldn't.
He had big hips.
He had very big hips and a big back. He used to hit while skating backwards, a little PK Subban-like. But I think what we see with Dalin is when the physicality is there, it spreads out to his whole game. It spreads out to his aggressive nature in front of the net, jumping on the rush, the offense. So, yeah, for me, physicality with Dalin, a healthy Dalin, makes a big difference.
I don't have the Sabre numbers in front of me, but I was intrigued by a note in the Penguins game notes today, which has me thinking more about Dalin, obviously his long-term future with the Sabres, given that this is year one of the contract extension. The Penguins listed all-time scoring duos featuring a forward and a defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So that got me thinking, like, which forward is Dalin going to play with the longest out of this current group, right? Whether it's Cousins or Thompson or whatever, right?
Who was the Pittsburgh all-time?
Well, no, but like, so this is all-time. So now I want you to think about this. The top four all-time forward and defense duos. This is goal scoring. This is two players collaborating on a goal for their respective teams. So obviously longevity has to be a part of it here. So that's why I was phrasing the Dalin side of it the way I was. But who do you think all time, the greatest duo, forward and defenseman, producing the most goals? Hint, they cheated because they did it for more than one team.
Oh boy, okay. Well, that has to be, would that be Jagr?
No.
It wouldn't be Jagr.
No.
Or it wouldn't be Mario. Mario only
played. What is the natural default mechanism I've tried to teach you?
To think outside the box.
No. It's always Gretzky.
Oh, I mean all time. I thought you meant Pittsburgh. Okay, all time.
No. This is why I said all time. Okay. Sorry, maybe I wasn't clear. Yeah.
Okay, Gretzky with Paul Coffey.
Yes, 99 and 77 in Edmonton. And LA.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Collaborated for 350 goals, which is
it's insane.
Ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Next on the list from the late 60s and early 70s.
So that has to be Montreal.
Nope.
No. Okay.
This team also won two cups back in that window.
Late 60s and early 70s. Oh, I'm thinking, well, would it be a Phil Esposito, Bobby Orr?
Yes, correct. Okay. They are. So this is where it gets
really
interesting.
I'm feeling really lucky right now, Duffer.
This is where it gets super interesting. They collaborated on 306.
Okay, so that's next not that on, far back. Okay.
Next on the list, 304. And it's not the Penguin duo, but it is an active duo in the NHL.
Active duo right now.
Well, technically, yes. One is not at 100% full health.
One is not 100% full health. It has to be Ovechkin and...
Nope.
No. Okay. I was thinking like Ovechkin and Carlson maybe would have been like the two guys, but... Yeah.
Which would be a great guess, and I'd like to see where they are on that list, but yeah.
Okay.
Who is the one guy that I always try to put feathers in his cap?
Feathers in his lap. Roman Josi.
Think of it from the forward standpoint.
Well, I was thinking, like, is Stamkos involved in that? But then I'm like, there's nobody in Tampa Bay that stands out as this goal-scoring defenseman that would have gone with Stamkos from those years. So I'm going to pass on that. I'm good after my Boston.
He just scored three against the Sabres.
Oh, Kopitar and
Doughty.
Doughty, yes.
The fact that they are number three
all time
is stunning. And only two goals. Like, they would have passed him already, presumably, if Drew wasn't hurt this year.
Yeah.
Like, they're two behind Esposito and Orr, and Crosby and Letang are one behind Kopitar and Doughty.
Like, I'm surprised that the Mario amazing? And Yager like, are not on that list with anybody yeah. because you think of Larry Murphy, you think of some of the mm-hmm. defensemen that the Pittsburgh Penguins had yeah. over the years. I would have thought, or even a Nick Lindstrom and somebody in Detroit, right? Like yep. a Datsuk or Zetterberg. Yep. Like, I'm yep. surprised like those guys.
And are I don't not have the full list in front of me, so I'm sure that they're not super, super far behind, no. but.
You okay, well, it's easy with Buffalo. And,
like, we just don't have that. The Penguins have it. They're one of the oldest teams in the league. They're almost 5 years older on yeah. average on their roster than the Sabres.
No, they are. Like, they're over 30 or just at 30 years old?
They're at, where were they at here? They were at 29.8.
Yeah. Just on under 30.
And Buffalo's at 25.3 right yeah. now, an average almost age on the full years. Roster. It's crazy.
That like is that is insane when you think about it, but...
Most of the time, just say, in case you don't know, like normally it's like a 1 to 2, maybe 3 year gap, you know, between
average age. This is a wide range between tops and, you know, bottoms or whatever. Yeah. But my answer would be easy. It would be Dahlin and Thompson with the Sabres that would get there. I just think of power play. Set me up for the one timer. I'm going to give it back to you because they're righty lefty. They can play that catch and, you know, shoot kind of game, and they can both have the one timer, and you know, maybe they don't score all the time, but they're going to help one another. So I would think Dahlin and Thompson would be the duo that I think could get there as a defenseman and forward. But again, it's you got to score 350 some goals 300 goals to get to the top five or whatever.
Pretty amazing. And it's a long ways off as those two are still very young in their careers. But you did pick the two longest tenured Sabres right now. Dahlin is first, Thompson is second as far as games played with this team on the current roster. And that roster is in Pittsburgh tonight. It's the first of a three-game road trip, and you'll see it on TNT, hear it on WGR Sports Radio 550, and we are rapidly approaching Hockey Halloween. I think Marty has ideas for this already, so we can't wait to join you on October 26th, yep. 1 p.m., wear your spookiest costume, celebrate Halloween with the Sabres. They will take on the Red Wings. First 5,000 fans in attendance receive a wearable goat head themed flag. So don't miss out. Visit sabres.com/tickets today. You know that we never know what day of the week it is. And it gets even more confusing because Darren Dreger joins us next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Four-game slate in the NHL tonight, including Buffalo at Pittsburgh, LA at Toronto as the road trip continues for the Kings, Boston at Colorado, you might want to give the goaltending edge to the Bruins, and Utah versus Anaheim to kick off the Ducks' 31st season. Darren Dreger is so excited about tonight's slate that he had to join us today, as opposed to his usual time slot tomorrow. Dregs, thank you for the early engagement this week. What is the biggest team story, positive or negative, that you're spending a little extra time on right now, as far as, you know, how long do these teams enjoy the ride or stay patient if they're not on the right side of it?
Yeah, I think we're all still a little fixated, at least here north of the border, on the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, that game did not start well. Philadelphia, with Mishkov at the helm, scored a couple of quick goals, and the Edmonton Oilers were reeling again. And, you know, memories of last year and how poorly they started the season, started drifting back. And already there's been calls for Stan Mullen to address the concerns on the defense. And, you know, the team basically coming out and saying, hey, this isn't a 5-6-7 defense issue. This is our top performers just aren't playing up to their capability. And that was pretty much the case last night, until it wasn't, until later in the hockey game, until the big boys decided that they were going to come alive. And maybe that was some coaxing from Chris Knobloch, the coach of the Edmonton Oilers, who actually pinned Leon Draisaitl to the bench for a couple of shifts. So from a Canadian perspective, I would say that the Edmonton Oilers are still in the crosshairs. But, you know, in saying that, I still have a lot of time for what we're seeing in Utah. And you know, having done this show for as many years collectively as we've done it, we used to kind of groan at the idea of talking about the Arizona Coyotes again, right? And okay, we have another rumor, Arizona's leaving, all of that. Well, this isn't kicking dirt on the Arizona Coyotes. What it is looking at the new life and opportunity of the expansion Utah Hockey Club and how well things are going. Now, I don't expect that Utah is going to have this sort of push, if that's the word to use, you know, for the remainder of this season. But there's some great stories in Utah and around that organization. And maybe it starts with the obvious and Dylan Gunther and how he's kind of come alive as a goal scorer. So there's a couple of stories on either end of the spectrum to follow here for sure.
Quickly,
Dregs,
though,
you mentioned
with Utah, though, Dregs, the loss of Durzi here and already Marino, it, from your insider standpoint, it gets more interesting to see like how aggressive they are at trying to keep this thing on the rails in year one if they have to endure such loss, right?
Yeah, and without talking to Bill Armstrong or anyone really of management, I think based on what we saw at the draft, and I'm going to tell you a quick story there, based on what we saw at the draft and everything that group was able to do, they're not all in. I mean, they know where they're at, but they do have an all-in feel in terms of wanting to give the entertainment expectation of that new fan base to the National Hockey League something to cheer about every night, every home game. So in that respect, I do think that you have to be as all in as you can be. And I'll go back to that draft. So Chris Johnson, my colleague, and I were standing, you know, in one of the hallways at the Sphere, just away from the floor. And Bill Armstrong walks by, shakes our hands. He's got a smile on his face, like grinning ear to ear. And that's normally the way Bill is. He's an outgoing dude. He's very personal. And I said, hey, you know, you got anything going? He goes, yep, we're about to shake the hockey world. And he walks away kind of giggling. I'm like, what are you kidding here? What's going on? And he just turned, smiled, and kept walking. So then another member of the organization walks by. I ask him, and he goes, no, he's not kidding. We got something big. Well, yeah, it was the Sergachev trade, right? So it turned out to be something pretty substantial. Clear indication that this organization has the resources to build the way, you know, a well-provided hockey operations department should build. So in answering that question, with some quality guys out there too, right? I mean, Kevin Shattenkirk, I don't know. I mean, maybe he doesn't see Utah as the best fit, because it's not about money for Shattenkirk. It's about just chasing that Stanley Cup dream. So a team like the Oilers would probably be a better fit, even though, as I said, they don't seem to think that their depth defense is an issue. But I could see Armstrong and Utah doing something to cover some of the gap.
Yeah, because when you look at Utah, they got about an $8.5 million cap space right now. They can definitely go out and get somebody. You mentioned Utah, Dregs. Yeah. And you mentioned the Oilers last night. Now, Matvey Michkov scored his first goal last night and what was a bit of a controversial goal. They first had to review it. If it had crossed the line, then the Oilers challenged for goalie interference. It stands. Michkov gets his first in the NHL, but the Rangers' rampage against Utah last week, there was a goalie interference call that was waived. The goal was waived off. You had Corey Perry against the Flames.
Yeah.
It was waived off. I thought those two goals were going to count. I thought last night Michkov's goal was good. Like, I'm just saying, I'm not a, you know, I can be a goalie lover, but in those instances, I was like, no, these are good goals, but the league went and called them. Where do you see the chatter right now with coaches and GM about that goalie interference?
Yeah, so you're saying that the Corey Perry deflection, at least in your mind, based on what you saw, what should have been a good goal?
Should have been a good goal. I didn't think I didn't think it interfered with Vladar at all.
I didn't either. And Ray Ferraro and I talked about this earlier this week, and he agreed vehemently, I would say. He was opposed to that goal getting called back.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking, all right, I don't want to bury the National Hockey League this early in the regular season. And how many times do we have this conversation? Nobody seems to know what goalie interference is. So, all right, is this just a habitual repeat offender in Corey Perry? I mean, he's made a living doing that, right? Yeah. Finding a way to get under the skin of goalies, somebody in front of the net, wreak havoc, do all of that. That's part of what he is as a very successful NHL player. So I start with general managers because normally they'll give you their view, you know, like a educated hockey person's view. I maybe went through 3-4 GMs and they said, they called that right. You know, they said, if there's such a thing as Exhibit A, when hockey operations is scrolling out video and showing us in general manager meetings what goalie interference is and why that goal should be called back, that's exactly what it is. And the explanation is that Corey Perry made no effort to get out of the crease. So, yes, there was contact. Vladar pushes with his blocker, right? Yep. Then he gets set. So in that respect, it didn't interfere with him being able to stop the puck. But he pushed, he made an effort to get Perry out. Perry had a substantial presence. Was that significant position is how it reads in the rule book in the crease and didn't alter it. So according to league textbook, so I gave the league a little bit of love yesterday in Insider Trading, just acknowledging that.
Well, I guess I always felt like the crease was more of a reference point. And I think the league with the rule 69 is, hey, the crease is not just a reference point. It is a sacred area. If you're going to be there, any contact is not going to be allowed. Even if it was, you know, Connor Ingram with Utah that initiated the contact with Rempe, or Vladar that initiated the contact with Perry. But last night it took 6 minutes. I think Connor McDavid was probably angry that it took, 20 minutes to, like he said last year, it took 6 minutes from goals to announcement, which is still a lot.
You know what? That still rankles Colin Campbell and the hockey ops guys, because Coley is like an elephant. He never forgets a thing, right? And I can't, James Duffy at TSN years ago referenced kicked in goal and made this big point on how kicked in goals should count, you know, unless you're deliberately soccer kicking a puck into the net. Anyway, I'm not to try and explain this position, but Campbell actually brought it up at a general manager's meeting, but he couldn't remember James Duthie, D-U-T-H-I-E, how to pronounce or spell his name. So he called him Duffy. Like D-U-F-F, Duffy. Like the old Mike Duffy, the journalist.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? And so he was, oh, yeah, we should call it the Duffy rule. So Coley has never forgotten. That's like 20 years ago. So he still references anytime there's sort of somebody talks about video review. It is, oh, well, the player from Edmonton. He won't give him the accolades of calling him Connor McDavid. He's the player from Edmonton. Thought it was 20 minutes. It was like 6.5 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, look, they push to get it right. I mean, at the end of the day, when it's that close, then one of two things happens, right? They either have they either have the conclusive evidence that it was a goal or it wasn't a goal, or they concede to what the call on the ice is. So if the call on the ice isn't conclusive, then they take the time needed to get the call right.
Yeah, I wanted the call to get right. And really, that was two reviews last night. One to see if the puck had actually gone in the net, yeah. And one to challenge.
And goalie interference.
So, yeah, there was a couple of them there. The Flames won last night, and they're surprising. If people don't know, the Flames are perfect this year. One of only three teams to be perfect, Winnipeg and the Dallas Stars, which we kind of expect that. Is this building going to get built faster now that the Flames are good again? Like, are they wrapping up 24/7 to make sure they have a new building faster in Calgary?
No, I mean, that is what it is. All kidding aside, obviously, but I mean, to me, I think this is all smoke. I don't think that it's ultimately going to play out this way. Although, you know, in doing the prep going into the regular season, you know, of course you'd get this level of feedback from management of the Calgary Flames, but they kept saying, look, by what we can see in training camp in the preseason, our forwards are going to be better than a lot of people think and expect. Mm-hmm. It is not a fire sale. It just isn't. You've got Nazem Kadri, who loves playing in Calgary, and he signed there with a purpose, not just based on the money. Huberto needed to be better than what he's been in Calgary. I think the days of seeing the Jonathan Huberto Florida numbers are behind him, but he still has to be a contributing player, and so far he's been that. You know, the kid last night who got cranked by, what's his name, Honick, who got clubbed by Connor Murphy in that reverse hit. I mean, he's an example of a good young player who's coming into the league at the right time in the right situation. So if their goaltending can hold up, and that's a big question mark with Vladar and Dustin Wolf. You know, Wolf, they think long-term is going to be better. But if structurally they can stay in tune, I think that they'll at least be competitive.
Really quick, an 880 save percentage, but he's 2-0 duffer. That's pretty good when you get an 880 save percentage.
Small sample size, and that applies to Nashville and Colorado as well in their winless starts through three. Where does the concern lie with either?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not concerned with Nashville. I think that that's a team that, and look, you know, talked to Steven Stamkos last week about this, and I think you just have to, maybe this goes back to the Edmonton conversation as we started the segment too. No matter how long you've played together in a salary cap world, there's always going to be change to the roster, right? And, you know, both those clubs have had to deal with it. So maybe you do go through some early season growing pains. There's too much talent in Nashville for this to be a long-term issue. I just don't see it. I'm curious to see what's going to happen in Colorado. Like, that goaltending just, it's no good. It's no good. And the issues that they have in trying to insulate their goaltending are abundantly clear. And we know Nathan MacKinnon runs hot, right? I mean, he always does, always will. It's a part of what makes him a great and fierce competitor. Mm-hmm. But he blew a gasket the other day. Now, it was directed at the officiating. So there seems to be more turmoil in Colorado this time of year than there should be.
Definitely dealing with a lack of punch up front based on injuries. We knew that coming into the year, but definitely the focal point has become the last line of defense in Colorado for sure. Dregs, thank you for the early appearance this week. So I can't really say have a great weekend. There's too much week left. Why not?
I have a really good hump day, Dregs. Have a good hump day.
Okay, well, that's unique, but I'll have a nice Wednesday. We'll leave it at that.
All right. See you, Dregs. Hockey you insider guys. Darren Dreger from TSN. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Last night in the NHL was... It's still so hard to put into words the loss endured by the Gaudreau family and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yet last night somehow was another reminder of the strength of this family and the Jackets organization, the Columbus community, and the National Hockey League. I was fortunate enough, Marty, to just in time kind of catch the majority of a pre-produced half-hour pregame show on Bally Sports Ohio that just used some tremendous footage that they had acquired on, you know, social media shoots, things like that with Johnny and his family in recent years. And it really took the best of Johnny's hockey life and his personal life. And then you had the pregame ceremony with Meredith and children on ice with both teams and the banner going up. It is, like I say, it's impossible to put into words, but everyone that was there last night deserves an awful lot of credit, which they obviously wouldn't want in this situation, for doing it absolutely right for Johnny and Matthew.
Yeah, I mean, Game Prez and whoever put it together, incredible. The 13 seconds at the start of the game where they started the game with only four players, nobody on the left wing of Sean Monahan, because that's where Johnny Gaudreau would have been. They win the draw to Sam Bennett, who played with Gaudreau in Calgary. He lays it there for what would have been his buddy right next to him in the faceoff. That was incredible. Even small things like the Florida Panthers showing up to the game with purple Gatorade and Skittles, which were two on Matthew Gaudreau, Johnny Gaudreau. But, you know, remembering Johnny and Matthew in this event at the same time, they were two of Johnny's favorite things. I could not, every time they showed his mom and dad, Guy and his, you know, and his mom, it just took my heart, because I feel like they just, unfortunately, revisited all the sadness and pain and hurt, right? But it was with the support of a community. So that really got to me when I saw his mom and dad many times on the broadcast.
Incredible, yet not surprisingly, Monahan scores. It was just amazing game. Wrong result for the Jackets, but, you know, in the big picture, it definitely didn't matter. Sabres Penguins tonight. Enjoy it. We'll see you tomorrow.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.